murder in first degree and 3 counts of attempted murder in the first degree. A second disaster has unfolded on Sunday in northern Mozambique in the wake of Cyclone Kenneth, as raging floodwaters killed one person and began to cut off the region's main city of Pemba from the outside world. Some 160,000 people are at risk, with more torrential rain forecast in the days ahead. Pemba resident Urbai Banu woke up to heavy rain on Sunday, saying that it's awful and that every year they suffer, something that's been taking place since 2013. This is the first time in recorded history that the Southern African nation has been hit by 2 cyclones in a single season. Afghanistan's president is hosting a grand council Monday of some 2,500 prominent figures to agree on a shared approach to peace talks with the Taliban, but the gathering instead looks to further aggravate divisions within the U.S.-backed government. In several rounds of talks with the Taliban, the U.S. envoy has narrowed the gaps on the deal in which U.S. forces would withdraw in return for guarantees that Afghanistan would not revert to a haven for international terrorists. Avengers Endgame has shattered the record for the biggest opening weekend. AP correspondent Ben Thomas has more.
We're in the endgame now.
And it's just huge. Avengers Endgame debuted with $350 million in North American ticket sales.
We still have one promise to keep.
And $1.2 billion globally.
If we can't protect the Earth, you can be damn sure we'll avenge it.
The only remaining question, can it top Avatar's nearly $2.8 billion gross?
Whatever it takes.
Avengers Endgame also helped pull Captain Marvel back into second, while last week's number one, The Curse of La Llorona, drops to third. I'm Ben Thomas.
The U.S. military said it sent 2 Navy warships through the Strait of Taiwan on Sunday as the Pentagon increases the frequency of movement through the strategic waterway despite opposition from China. Taiwan is one of a growing number of flashpoints in U.S.-China relations. I'm Steve Miller, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, April 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sudanese protesters say they have suspended talks with the ruling military council.
The military starts contacting some of the parties who were part of the Bashir system. So for that reason, the protesters feel that the military are not serious to carry on what they promised.
Elami Shingraya is a member of the Politburo of the 27 November movement. A Ugandan police spokesman will explain why the police canceled Bobby Wine's Easter holiday concert. Malawi will launch a pilot malaria vaccine this Tuesday. And Liberia's justice minister summons a member of parliament critical of President George Weah to appear today, Monday.
I've exercised my right according to the Constitution to do what I'm doing, to speak for the Liberian people. If I have to go to jail for that, I got no problem with that.
Yeka Koluba is a member of the Liberian legislature. And Liberia's information minister says the WEA government believes in the rule of law. And those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Let reports out of Sudan on Sunday said the Sudanese Professional Association has suspended talks with the ruling military council for the council's failure to transfer quickly to a civilian government. The group led protests that led to the overthrow of President Omar al-Bashir. Elami Shingraya, a member of the Politburo of the 27 November movement, says in addition, the military council has been too close to the deposed leader, Bashir.
The military agree with the protest at the first day that they are going to agree with them on all what had been signed before. And what happened now, there is some delay in their part. And number two, the military starts contacting some of the parties who were part of the al-Bashir system. So for that reason, the protesters feel that the military are not serious to carry on what they promised in their first announcement 4 days or 5 days ago.
So what do you think is going to happen next now? What's going to happen?
Now I think we are going to just wait for the military with their reaction. We hope that they will be wise enough to agree with the protesters and to sit down with them and to sort out all the problems so they can return back to the table. If the military council continue on the same program or the same schedule of al-Bashir, then things will not be good.
We keep talking about the military. Did the civilian groups put forward any names that they would like to see in the transitional government?
No, they hold on announcing names. They said now let us finish the first, which is to make sure that the military council will agree upon the first important issue, which is to release the power for the Sudanese professional gathered. These Sudanese professional gathered are the only group of Sudanese civilians who had been agreed upon by most of the Sudanese people as the representatives of them. And we don't want other parties to speak on behalf of the Sudanese except the Sudanese professional gathered.
There was a story on Sunday that the military-led government is planning to send a delegation to Washington to get the United States to drop Sudan from the list of countries that sponsor terrorism. Do you think that that should happen right now?
I heard that in the news that they are going to send a delegation, and I think that will be a good relief by lifting all these sanctions against Sudan.
Even when the military government has not made possible a smooth transition.
We expect actually a press release from the Sudanese professional gathered about this issue. Are they going to help the military council on that issue, or are they going to contact the American government to stop that initiative?
Elami Shingraya is a member of the Political Bureau of the 27 November Movement. He was speaking with me from Washington, D.C. Liberia Justice Minister has summoned a member of the House of Representatives, Yeka Koluba, to the Justice Ministry today, Monday, to discuss tension in the country involving the representative and President George Weah, some former rebels who now are members.
My child is saying no. So you need to be fair in your statement. Don't just say the two leaders will be disappointing. One of them will be disappointing, not all of them.
The people of South Sudan, what should they expect from this IGAD meeting?
The people of South Sudan are expecting the establishment of the transitional government of national unity in time. The president is abiding by the provisions of the agreement and is respecting the appeal of the people.
Michael Makui is South Sudan's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. New negotiations are underway between Sudan's Transitional Military Council and the Freedom and Change Forces in terms of how many civilians should be represented on the Transitional Council. This after the military and the civilians agreed over the weekend to form a joint transitional government. The civilians want to choose majority of the proposed 15-member council, while the military wants to limit the civilian representation. Dr. Ghazi Atabani is the leader of the Reform Now party. He says the mere fact that the two sides have agreed to form a joint transitional council is progress.
They have reached an agreement on those issues, which means that they have negotiated a very important part of the agreement. They now seem to have agreed on the formation of a sovereign council, whatever they are going to call it. And what's left is to agree on executive body, cabinet, council, ministers. That should be the next step.
How soon, Dr. Ghazi, can this transitional authority be formed?
Well, it's difficult to put a date on that. But the mere fact that they have agreed in principle on this rather sticky point, I think all goes well. And they shouldn't take long to identify the 15 members. So it's still being negotiated, but a major breakthrough has been made.
Is there a disagreement between the Freedom and Change Forces and the military in terms of who or what group should have more representation? We understand that the Freedom and Change Forces want more civilian representation. Is that the case?
That is the case. They're likely to settle for 8-7, that's my guess, or something around that. But 8-7, 8 to the civilian side and 7 to the military side. I cannot guarantee that the military can accept a majority on the side of the civilians. So maybe the nomination is going to take a lot more effort to reach agreement. They have 15 members now. Seven of them will go to the military and eight will go to the civilians. Agreeing on the name would be a daunting task.
Is there a concern, Dr. Ghazi, that the more military people you have on this council, the protesters might think that the military has not heard or listened to the people?
Well, that's the risk we are taking. We have no choice. And so we should try to avoid sanctions by the African Union and by other countries, the United States included. So, I mean, it puts pressure on the council, it puts pressure on the political system at large to reach agreement on specific issues. That's the only way countries like the United States and unions like the African Union can.
Dr. Ghazi Atabani is the leader of the Reform Now Party in Sudan. He was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. Despite parliamentary elections results being announced more than a month ago, the new government in Guinea-Bissau has yet to be formed. Domingo Simoes Pereira, the president of the ruling African Party for the Independence of Guinea-Bissau and Cape Verde, PAIGC, spoke with Ricky Shryak about the party's eventual candidate for president in the upcoming presidential polls this year, as well as the ongoing political stagnation in the country.
I believe that since our constitution is what we call semi-presidential system, or if you wish, a parliamentary system, which expects the president to be somehow detached from the party. I believe that the party should enlarge its capacity to choose among the citizens. So being close to the party is important, maybe. Share the same views on the political issues with the party is important. But I believe that party should be able to choose its candidates, even if they don't belong in terms of the formal relation to the party.
When do you think that you guys will announce who you want to run? And do you have a personal favorite you'd like for president?
As you understand, this is not something that I can share. As a person, I may have some inclinations, but I would ensure that my inclination would go in a sense of fulfilling what I believe to be the best way to run that duty.
And when do you think PAIGC will announce who they want to run?
Normally, we do that when the president fixes the date for the elections.
And elections are for November, normally. I mean, I know he hasn't announced it, but...
Yeah, the mindset today is that he should announce for October or November.
What about the prospects for constitutional reform that the Conakry agreements called for? You know, do you think those reforms can really take place? And do you think that it should be the constitution should favor a more presidential or a more parliamentary angle direction?
The Conakry agreement was referring to the constitutional revision. That's because we are facing a crisis. And as you should understand, countries around us have mostly the presidential system. So it's the easy answer. If you have a crisis, if you have a different system, change system. Yeah. I don't believe that, because in the past we had the presidential system. That was the time we had most of coup d'etats.
And when do you think the new government will be announced?
You know, this is one of the many elements that shows that our democracy still needs to be protected. So when all this thing is done and the parliament transfers to the president the information that we have this sovereign structure, and now we ask you to confirm the party who came in first place, when the president starts hearing other institutions, in a sense, he's replacing the decision that has already been taken by the people to his capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the fragility of our democracy.
That was Domingo Simoes Pereira, president of Guinea-Bissau's ruling PAIGC. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Bissau. Today is Monday, April 29th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. The mayor of Liberia's capital city, Monrovia, says the cleanliness of the city should be the responsibility of all its residents. But Mayor Jefferson Koji says keeping the city clean would require changing the mindset of the residents. The mayor was in Washington, D.C. as part of an international panel looking at how best to strengthen the capacities of African cities in dealing with their sanitary conditions.
Quite frankly, I will share with you that the sanitary condition of the city is seriously challenging. I'm not stating the point of it as a means of escaping my responsibility. But you have to be very honest as a leader. But we think that this situation of our city got to do with our mindset. The mindset of the people need to be changed. As I speak to you currently before I left, we have launched a 3-month pilot project. And our pilot project, we got to do with ensuring that we engage primary waste. Because what has been happening in Monrovia, basically, we have been engaged into secondary waste, where the community dwellers and our business people, we transport their waste on the main street where you see the escape bucket plays on the main road and those places. So whenever the city government is not on tour to collect those escape bucket on time, so they spill it, you know, sometimes and bury. Those are things that people see. We also call on our citizens and saying to them, look, the cleanliness of our city got to be done with each and every one of us.
When the CDC took over, I think I saw you launched a cleanliness campaign. Are you still doing that?
Like I said to you, before taking over, I've been in the city, and I have followed the trend of issues in our city. And I thought one of the issues is not the physical waste that is being disposed. And I think the issue is the mindset, and that's why I keep emphasizing that, look, to have a clean city, like all of these international euphoria have ever been fortunate to the ten. And then when you listen to the source of story of these people, what they normally say to you is that the psyche of the citizenry must be shifted towards taking responsibility.
Mayor, before I let you go, one of the complaints I've heard against you and your management is that whenever there is a protest in Monrovia, that you tend to be anti-protesters. There is a protest. First of all, I'll give you a chance to answer that. A protest is scheduled for June 7th in Liberia. Will you allow the protest to take place in Monrovia?
Well, I think that information is grossly misleading. I am a respecter of a democracy. I believe in pluralistic, you know, democracy. Before even becoming mayor, I, as a person, led a series of protests in the country, both as former student leader, at the same time as what you call the national youth leader of the then, you know, leading opposition party. So under no circumstances that a person like me, I'm a product of what you call pluralistic democracy. So what do I mean? I should be very tolerant. It would be foolhardy for us to think that we will come to power and no one will have an avarian view of us.
Jefferson Koji is the mayor of Liberia's capital city, Monrovia. He spoke with me in Washington, D.C. Zambia's founding president, Kenneth Kaunda, and one of the leading players in the liberation of Africa, celebrated his 95th birthday yesterday, Sunday. During his presidency, Zambia supported the liberation movements of Mozambique, Angola, Zimbabwe, and Namibia. The African National Congress of South Africa says the name of President Kaunda will always be synonymous with the freedom and liberation of Africa. Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for Zambia's main opposition, United Party for National Development. He says there is something else that we all can learn from the former president, and that is longevity.
Everybody is happy, everybody is excited that Dr. Kaunda has managed to reach 95 years old. We are admiring him because to reach that age, he had to have a lot of discipline. We know from his life that he's a person that, for example, in his lifestyle, he never drank beer, he never ate meat and other red foods. He was a vegetarian. And that has helped him to reach that age. Apart from his health and the discipline in that area, he's also an icon in the liberation of Zambia and Southern Africa and Africa in the whole.
Yes, and that is true because I was reading a message from South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, who said that Mr. Kaunda embodies selfless attributes, which is propelled the Zambian leader to continue the fight against imperialism, colonialism, and apartheid that contributed to South Africa's political freedom and emancipation. I wanted you to talk more about that. For young people who were not alive in the 60s, 70s, and the 80s, what can you tell them about your founding president?
Founding President Dr. Kaunda was selfless. He put society's interests before him. He risked his life, was arrested and jailed, but he never gave up. Liberate fellow Zambians was more important than his own life. So that is what should be emulated, that when you see evil in society, you must not sit back. You must stand up and fight for the rights of yourself and of everybody in society. So he managed to liberate Zambia, but even after liberating Zambia in 1964, he still thought that even if Zambia is liberated, Zambia's independence does not mean anything as long as everybody else in Southern Africa and in Africa as a whole was still under colonialism or apartheid laws. So he fought very hard to liberate Angola, Mozambique, Namibia, Zimbabwe, and South Africa. And he has remained a hero in that area. And that is what we must emulate, that we need to sacrifice in life in order to better the lives of other people.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for Zambia's main opposition United Party for National Development. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. A court in Zimbabwe's second largest city, Bulawayo, has granted bail to seven Chinese nationals facing charges of violating the country's anti-money laundering laws and also possession of rhino horn pieces. They were arrested since December. All seven have pleaded not guilty to the charges. As part of their bail, they will have to pay $1,600 each and surrender their passports. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very, very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, Jim. We begin the sports in London, where Eliud Kipchoge of Kenya ran the second fastest marathon time ever to clinch his fourth London Marathon title on Sunday ahead of Britain's Mo Farah, who struggled in fifth, while Kenya's Bridget Kosgei impressed to win the women's race. Kenya's Eliud Kipchoge made it an incredible 11 marathon wins from 12 races, leading from start to finish to come home in a time of 2 hours, 2 minutes and 37 seconds. 58 seconds off his own record set last year in Berlin.
It's not easy as people think, because you never know what will happen when everybody's at your back.
From the first kilometer to 42 kilometers is not easy, but here in London, it's great. Wonderful.
The women's race got off to a slow start, but reigning champion Vivian Cheruiyot ran a fast 15th mile before Chicago Marathon champion Kenyan Bridget Kosgei took the lead and strode to her first London title with a time of 2 hours, 18 minutes, 20 seconds. In football news, Cameroon beat Guinea on penalties 5-3 to be crowned the champion of the total on the 17th African Cup of Nations 2019 at the National Stadium Dar es Salaam on Sunday. It is Cameroon's second under 17 Nations Cup title, having previously been African champions in 2003. Goalkeeper Manfred Ekoi was a hero for the Cameroonians, saving one Mohamed Sako's kick from the short distance before Serdo Mubarak scored to give Cameroon their second title after their maiden title in Eswatini in 2003. In the CAF Champions League, Wydad Casablanca beat Mamelodi Sundowns 2-1 in their CAF Champions League semi-final first leg clash at the Prince Moulay Abdullah Stadium in Rabat at the weekend. Goals from Saheldin Saidi and Aouk Badi secured a narrow aggregate lead for the Moroccans ahead of the reverse fixture at the Lucas Moripe Stadium in Antarishville on the 4th of May. Mamelodi Sundowns' Anele scored a vital away goal for the South Africans, who know a 1-0 win in the second leg will be enough to send them through to the final. In the other semi-finals, Osborne's Dutunis defeated TP Mazembe 1-0 at the Olympic Stadium in Raids on Saturday evening. The Blood and Gold will take the narrow advantage to the Ravens' home ground at Stade TP Mazembe in Lubumbashi next Saturday. In the CAF Confederations Cup, Zamalek secured a narrow 1-0 win over Etoile du Sahel in the semi-final first leg match played at the Burj Jarab Stadium in Egypt on Sunday night. The Egyptians' giant will carry a 1-0 lead on aggregate into the second leg encounter, which will be played in Etoile's home country, Tunisia, on Sunday, May the 5th. Elsewhere, Tunisian side CS Sfaxien took full advantage of playing in front of their home crowd with a 2-0 win over Moroccan side RS Bakkeni in their first leg CAF Confederations Cup semi-final at the Stade Taïb Mahiri on Sunday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you a summary of Africa news, authorities in Mozambique have urged citizens to seek higher ground to avoid the flooding and mudslides that are sure to come in the aftermath of Cyclone Kenneth. Prime Minister Carlos dos Rosario said the death toll from Kenneth stands at 5. Mozambique's National Institute of Disaster Management said Kenneth has destroyed more than 3,000 houses and displaced more than 18,000 people. The government said most of the homes on the Mozambican island of Ibo, home to about 6,000 people, were destroyed. That's it for this Monday, April 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good week.
At the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com. VOA.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscast covering Africa news. Tune in on the top of each hour 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.